Hi and welcome to the Homeopathy Health Show. I'm Atiq Ahmed Bhatti, a fourth generation homeopath with over 25 years of professional experience and practice in this field of healing. The Homeopathy Health Show is the online voice of homeopathy around the world, promoting and raising awareness of this truly unique system of healing, which is suitable for all ages, young and old. Every week, I invite guests from the world of homeopathy to come and share their experiences, their work, offer insights, and essentially talk all things homeopathy. Why not visit www.liketreatslike.co.uk and click on the radio and podcast button to listen to the latest episodes. So let's begin today's show here on UK Health Radio, the world's number one talk health radio. Hi and welcome to another episode of the Homeopathy Health Show here on UK Health Radio, and I'm your host, Atiq Ahmed Bhatti. Well, I do hope you're well. I've got a splendid episode for you today. My guest is Roger Savage, who is a classically trained registered homeopath from the United Kingdom. Now, Roger has over 40 years of clinical experience and studied at the School of Homeopathy, graduating in 1987. Roger is a classical prescriber, but takes great interest in various approaches, including those of Dr. Rajan Sankaran and Dr. Jan Scholten. Roger says in his biography, "It is a great joy to see how people are transformed when the right treatment not only removes their physical symptoms, but also helps their general energy and positive approach to life." Roger's speciality is very much on allergies, digestion, and headaches, and says that these are such frequent problems these days, they can be hard to resolve. Over the last several years, Roger has been working with Ton Jensen, studying what we now call human chemistry as a way and means to resolve more complex cases which can be burdened by toxins of many kinds. Roger says, if they can be relieved, how the sun shines again. Roger Savage, it's an absolute pleasure to have you on the Homeopathy Health Show. Thank you so much.
And it was a great surprise when I got your first message, because I thought, now, what have I done to deserve this honour? So during our chat, I hope you'll tell me.
Well, I think you have done a great deal, actually, and we are going to talk about that. Just for the listeners, we have been talking via email. We've been exchanging quite a few emails, myself and Roger. And it's always so exciting because it's like a build-up. And finally, you're here. So I'm thrilled and I'm delighted.
My pleasure. So I'm wondering what you're going to be asking me today.
Roger, I'd be very interested to know about your journey to homeopathy. It's quite interesting, and earaches and tonsillitis were the main causations, I suppose, for your introduction to homeopathy.
Yes, that's right. I must have been about 5 or 6 or 7, and I did have quite a lot of tonsillitis, and sometimes it would go to earache, and I remember my mother saying to me that the GP at the time said, "I've shot my bolt. I can only now suggest he has his tonsils out." And for some reason, my parents were against that. I don't mean I regret it. I mean, at the time, that was an unusual reluctance, because many people I knew at school had routinely had tonsils out, because there was an idea around in my childhood that there were various organs we don't need. One was tonsils, one spleen, one appendix, and I'm afraid I've forgotten what the fourth one was. Of course, this idea is completely wrong. The tonsils are a filter of particulates, stopping them coming into our system. So my mother must have known somehow about homeopathy, and they investigated and found a medical homeopath not that far from us in North London, and took me there. And interestingly, he saw us out at the end of the session and noticed that I'd wrapped my scarf around my ears. And he said, all right, do it today, but after this, please do not wrap your ears up. You can wear the scarf round the neck, but let your ears be exposed to the air. In old-fashioned language, Attic, this was called developing habits of hardiness. I've often read that expression. Mm. I mean, we have to develop a certain degree of tolerance of different sorts of conditions. Now, I don't know what the remedy was. And in those days, homeopaths didn't say. Later, we found another homeopath much nearer to us. And there I was taken because I had a lot of spots on the face, particularly the forehead. And I know that the remedy she gave was called SSC, sulfur, silica, and carbovege. Well, it didn't do any good. And I believe that formula is still in use by an older style of classical homeopaths. Seems to me a slightly strange combination. I suppose the idea was she said it would purify the blood. Well, it will if it's the indicated remedy.
Hmm.
I gradually grew out of those spots, I suppose. She also advised at the time, drink much less milk, because I was never a tea drinker in childhood and really drank quite a lot of milk a day. So with that advice, catarrh levels dropped. And then, interestingly, Attic, at university, I met a young man who'd actually been to India, to Tiruvannamalai in the south. And there he'd come across homeopaths. And he looked at my situation at the time, and I was having a variety of symptoms at the age of about 21. And he said, you need silica. And at that time, I was sleeping very long, missing breakfast, waking up mid-morning, you know, like late teens, early 20s do. And he gave me a silica 200, which was ordered from a pharmacy in London. And immediately I started yawning. And the very next morning, I was awake at 7:30, went into college, met him, and we went into breakfast. And the chef said, good heavens, I must cook you up something special. So that was quite dramatic. A month or two later, I had the most terrible eruptions on the hand, especially on the knuckles, with deep, deep cracks. And that by that time, he told me to buy a Burica Materia Medica and Repertory, that little book. And I read through it and thought, I think I match Thuya, because Thuya says, cannot eat onions. And that's true for me. So I got myself some Thuya, and I must say it did clear up those knuckles. So these were interesting early experiences. So that's quite a long answer to a simple question, but that is how it started. But let me tell you another remarkable incident. Again, several months later, after I'd finished at university, I again had eruptions on the hands. And there was another homeopath nearby in North London. I went to see him, and he looked at my hand, spoke to me a bit, and said, you need Heparsulf 6C, take a dose every 2 hours, no time limit. And I thought, that's a bit odd, but all right, I'll do it. Now, after a month or two, the hands weren't really better. And I went back and said, and he said, no, you just carry on. But I was starting to develop severe reactions to sugar. And I thought to myself, I need to antidote this. I'm sure this kind of prescription is not right. And I had an instinct, an intuition, and went and got Heparsulf 1M. And I took a dose, and I was on the underground, going back from one office to another, and was suddenly desperate for a bowel movement, but had to hold tight. And then I got on the train and went the wrong way and was even more desperate and eagerly got back, rushed to the office and safety. And with that dramatic clearance, the skin got better and the sugar reaction got better. So I certainly learned about dosage and would say to anybody, a prescription like take this every 2 hours, no time limit, would only have its place in palliative care. And by palliative, I mean a terminal case. It's just not a wise thing to do. Possibly I proved the remedy. It certainly jarred me. And when I went back and told the man this, he said, well, never mind. Look, he said, I've been struck off the medical register. I want to sell this practice. Why don't you buy it? And I was only age 22. And I said, but you've got acupuncture patients here. He said, well, that's all right. You can deal with them. And I just thought, I can't buy somebody's practice, even though he said, I'll give you easy terms. I don't know enough. I'm too young. I haven't seen anything of life. I wouldn't carry any conviction. I don't have the confidence. So I passed on that one and actually went into teaching of English to foreign students for 7 or more years. And then various awful things happened in my life, and I knew it was time to start looking into holistic medicine seriously. And that led me, through knowing a naturopath in London, led me to the study of radionics, which I did first, and went and got qualified, and then began a very active practice in radionics. But all the time, the voice was saying to me, homeopathy, homeopathy. And one day, I didn't do the radionic test. I picked up the pad and said, okay, sir, tell me your symptoms. And it was an organic process. It just happened.
That's a very, I must say, it's a beautiful symphony of experiences there, which you've just related.
It's astonishing when I come to tell you about it.
There's so many, there's highs, there's lows, there's in-betweens.
Yes.
It's a variety of notes. It's very eloquently said as well, I must say. Roger, you said something very interesting, which was about dosage and the importance of dosage, because many a time a remedy is indicated through whatever means, through experience, through repertorization, through intuition. And the thought comes in your mind, which you also have just mentioned in one of the examples. But the remedy, let's say, is taken in a 30C or a 6C, and it doesn't show the desired results, even though it is the remedy, and even though a practitioner knows it must be that, it has to be this. What's your advice as far as dosage and potencies are concerned?
I said we should only do that kind of rapid repetition in a terminal case. I must revise that statement and say we should only do it if the symptoms demand it. Now, that might be in a fast-moving and very unpleasant, unbearable acute, when one may need to do that to keep the person comfortable, which may not be terminal at all. But to do endless repetitions in a non-urgent case, that is what I meant, is bad prescribing. Now, Rajan Sankaran once came out with a statement with his usual wicked grin. If the indicated remedy fails, it isn't the indicated remedy. But there is another way of looking at it. There may be obstacles to cure, which Hahnemann wrote so much about. And this is where something we can talk about a bit later, using the human chemistry method, comes in, because we may need to investigate if we're sure that that remedy matches all symptoms. Two or three different repertories say so. Two or three homeopaths reviewing the person say so, and yet it doesn't work. What have we missed, or are there obstacles? is there a history of heavy drugging, of other sorts of influences that are not allowing this apparently indicated remedy to work? So we then have to have our strategies. But if a person doesn't have any detectable obstacles, we may need to think, now, maybe this person is sensitive to the right potency. Now, if I gave a 30 and it didn't really work, if the condition is more physical, perhaps I should give it lower. If the condition has more aspects, including mental, emotional, I may need to go higher. So we have to keep an open mind and not just do what we've always done. Now, there's the ordinary centesimal scale. There's the LM scale, the 50 millesimal. We even, if it looks as though it's necessary, can use these not very well-known C4, C5, C6 scale potencies, where they are triturated one, two, or three more steps. And it makes a big difference to the action of the remedy because it opens the molecules out more. It releases another kind of energy. They're not widely known. They are not readily available. But I just mention it in case anybody, for example, is dealing with a deeply embedded case which has echoed down several generations or affects the person in their community, and the apparently indicated remedy isn't scoring. One may have to look at it in a slightly different way.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
Apples and pears, beef and skittles, cider with Rosie, common or garden, Ant and Deck, fish and chips, mum and dad.
UK Health Radio and Health Triangle magazine. Each is good by itself, but enjoying both is always better. Add Health Triangle magazine to your monthly health regime. Check it out at ukhealthradio.com. Strawberries and cream.
Once upon a time, human slavery was just a fact of life. Right now, animal abuse is often considered normal. In time, it won't be. Animal Aid campaigns peacefully against all forms of animal abuse and promotes cruelty-free living.
Check out animalaid.org.uk. It's time for a kinder world.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
That's fascinating. And if anyone is actually interested in what you've just said and wants to know more, reference the C4, C5 remedies, where would they go for more information and knowledge?
There is a book that's been written about them. And Ton Jansen said, I need to take acetylcholine because I forget things. Acetylcholine is a neurotransmitter that helps us with the memory function. I haven't yet gone on a course of it, and I should. I will have to think who that book is by and let people know so that you can put it in the notes that follow this broadcast, the support material. There will be one or two of them in Helios. There are one or two special ones in Stellar Homeopathics. Nelson in England, I don't think will have. Ainsworth may or may not, but probably not. More or less what they buy in. The problem is a lot of bench space is needed for the additional processing. Hahnemann Apotheek in the Netherlands have one or two, but are not going into major production for that reason. There is a pharmacy called Remedia, which may be Belgian, who I think have them. But often people then have to make them themselves, you know, in working groups, in experiential remedy-making potency groups, you know, get together, sit around the table with their pestle and mortar and make them. And then that effect is a kind of, what's the word I want, trituration proving, because you will inevitably inhale and absorb some of the energies while working with the remedy. And then you note what you experience at each step.
Fascinating.
So it moves one into another dimension, which I have done a tiny bit of, but not for some time.
It's a big resounding yes also to the sheer miracle of homeopathy.
Yes.
It's so, so broad and so versatile. It can be as broad as you want it to be. It can be as versatile as one wants it to be. It's incredible, isn't it? The healing potentials that we perhaps haven't even tapped into yet.
Yes, yes, absolutely. Yeah, there is so much. And then people say, why do we need more remedies? Haven't we got enough already? Well, we have a lot. And in investigating new ones, we shouldn't forget those that have been known for ages. Because I often say, how many people regularly give oleander as a remedy? And that is in Hahnemann's Materia Medica Pura. Not that often. It's just one example. Many of the Indian homeopaths, the Indian classical homeopaths, are familiar with the old remedies as well. Some of us tend to forget while investigating new ones. We need both.
I absolutely agree with you. And also, I found personally that, as you know, Julian mentioned in his Materia Medica about a remedy called Okubaka.
Oh, yes.
And that's a really great remedy. As an example, I mean, personally, I like using it, but it's such a good, great remedy. And he himself has written it sits between Arsenicum and Nux Vomica. So it's in between.
Right. That is one I have tended to forget. Artik, I must look it up again and bring it back into use.
It's a really effective remedy. I mean, it's good for multiple things. So yeah, that's, I mean, what you've just said is that there's so many old and even forgotten remedies. Mm. And it's very true. I found that doctors from India are very much into using the old, forgotten and rare remedies. Mm. Old meaning as in people just have forgotten them, let's say. They're not old as in old, because then they're all old, right?
Yeah,
all the remedies.
Right.
But
I know what you mean.
It's interesting because they actually, sometimes I found they work better than the common ones, because maybe the common ones are so common.
Yes. Yes. Yes, that's right. There is a danger to think in terms of, what do they say, 30 polocrests and 4 nosodes, and you can do all your work in that. Well, some people can do very well. But what is interesting when one repertorizes is to see if a little known remedy comes high up. And Jan Scholten pointed out the truly indicated remedy may be number 10, 15, or 20 in the list as one looks along, because there won't be so much evidence for them in the Materia Medica. But there may be one or two crucial points that make the dominant choice.
That's very true. And I'll give that example of Okubaka again. It doesn't show up. It doesn't show up at all, actually. I've never seen it show up. But you have to use it, of course, for its indications, like so many other remedies. You know.
Yeah. So there is a homeopath in England whose talk is often called Beyond the Repertory, because what we need may not be in. The repertory writers have strict criteria, and they want written evidence of these remedies. So they're looking for written literature, and often that doesn't exist at that point particularly. So they don't go in because there's no corroboration. And yet many practitioners will know, I know that that will work in that case, so I just use it anyway. And if I'm in that mood, I put symptoms into the repertory and see, now I wonder what's going to show up. Oh, right. And I often have to say to a patient, look, the symptoms you're suffering are very vivid to you and very unpleasant to you. But for homeopathy, I'm afraid they're very general. And at the moment, I've got 100 remedy choices. Now, look, we need to look a bit more and find something that makes your situation stand out.
Hmm. And that's a skill, isn't it? That really is something you learn. I relayed to somebody on a previous podcast recently that when I started out, a very good friend of mine who's a homeopath, they said to me that, Atik, it's going to take you at least 10 years before you actually know what you're doing.
Yeah.
That was so true.
Yes.
And to be honest, perhaps I still don't know what I'm doing, but you know, the learning curve is, it's a lifetime commitment to healing. It's not just you've done a 4-year course or diploma or whatever it is and off you go.
Yeah.
The experiences are so different. The observations are so different to reading them in a book. It's a totally different dynamic.
Yes. Yes. Yes, absolutely. And every situation is individual. Every situation is new. As Kent said, it may look like something else, but it is not the same as something or somebody else.
Mm, absolutely. I'm really enjoying this conversation, by the way. So it's,
I think we're doing nicely.
Now, I want to go back slightly to post-university, and you said that you went into teaching, and this was to foreign students. Is this when you picked up some of the languages? Because just before this recording, you were conversing with me in Punjabi and Hindi, which is amazing, and we will share that, of course, after this podcast. There are going to be some videos, just so you know. I think that's just, I can't wait to record those, actually. But how did that go about then? How did your interest come about there?
It wasn't in the language schools that I got a little flavor of Hindi and Punjabi. I know in the Indian community, so many people. So I drew it from them. But in the school, in a class of 15 or 18 people, there might be a French person, a German or two, Scandinavian, Spanish, Portuguese, and South American, which can mean either Brazilian or one of the Spanish-speaking countries. In those days, Persia, Iran, which I should imagine doesn't figure now, we didn't have Russians. Nor did we have what were then called Iron Curtain countries, because that blockade was still there. And we had a lot of Arabs, but I didn't mix with them mostly, so didn't really pick up any Arabic. Oh, and I shouldn't forget Italians, because they were always so full of life, so naturally one picked up snatches of phrases from them. And actually, towards the end of my time in the teaching, when I was beginning to feel, look, it's time I've got to make this change, I started to find one or two of the students themselves were keen on homeopathy. So we would have little discussions. One had an awful cough, and I said, have you taken Bryony? She said, no, my mother says it should probably be Rumex. And I said, oh, thinking, I don't know Rumex, I must look it up. Right. So her mother was at that point a much better home prescriber than I was, but I hadn't had any training at that point.
Mm.
So slowly, gradually, the emphasis changed. And so the career changed.
Which then led you actually to the School of Homeopathy in Devon.
Yes, yes, it did. It did. Originally, Misha Norland lived in London, and I was going to run a course with him in Cambridge. That was all set up. And then he got the opportunity, found this property in Devon, so he moved. There were other people who wanted to do the course in Cambridge with me and for me, but I didn't feel it was going to gel with them, so I didn't do it. And instead, for 4 years, I had to trot up and down between Cambridge and Saffron Walden and Devon, but we had a good training there.
How was that? I know that you'll be interested to know Manny Norland has been on the show.
Oh, good.
It's a beautiful place to study, isn't it?
Now, he is in somewhere in Stroud.
Yes.
They have moved. I went to Misha Norland in central Devon at his homestead. After all, when I was training, Manny was only 10, 12, 13, 14, and wasn't there all the time. Now, of course, he's the driving force of the school, and his brother as well, doing the radar program. So they've been well soaked in homeopathy, well absorbed in it. And then he's running it at this place in Stroud. I haven't been there, but it looks quite something.
It is quite magical, yes.
But it's no longer in their own house. So, yeah, that was interesting, going down to Misha's. And once that was finished, I had quite a break from long-distance travelling. I mean, that was tiring, doing all that travelling. Now I do all my work online. I don't go out to clinics. I've got the excuse of age, and the corona epidemic was a good alibi, and I've kept it.
How do you find that, though, Roger? Is online
absolutely
just
fine.
As effective as...
Yes, yes. Most people are happy with it. If they say, look, I want somebody face-to-face. Okay, all right. Where are you? Yes, well, you could try this person, try that person, see if they can take you. But most people are fine with it. Because also then they don't have to travel.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Animal Aid campaigns peacefully against all forms of animal abuse and promotes cruelty-free living. We've been doing this for over 40 years. Every year, more and more people are living satisfying lives completely cruelty-free. Check out animalaid.org.uk. It's time for a kinder world.
A cancer diagnosis can be scary and stressful for everyone involved. Hello Love is a contemporary living space and well-being center in central London where anyone can come and learn about illness prevention and non-toxic practice. Inside, you will find a vegan restaurant, juice bar, and holistic dojo that encourage lifestyle changes to help heal mind, body, and spirit connection. Cancer patients are offered free sessions. To find out more, please visit us at hellolove.org.
The station that makes you feel good.
It's a huge benefit, isn't it? And nearly every homeopath I've had on the show so far has said the same thing, that since post-pandemic, it has made life, it's streamlined the consultation process more, which is a positive. I mean this in as a plus point, that makes it easy. There's no time for traveling. There's the cost element of traveling, of course. There's also the anxiety. There's always an anxiety when you're going for a consultation, and sitting in your own home makes it so much easier. And through technology, you can actually have a more productive conversation, I found, because you have to concentrate more. When someone's in front of you, it's just, it's a different shift, isn't it?
Well, it is. Now, I'd already started doing a lot of online before the corona days, but that sealed it, and no longer would anybody comment. But you raised a point, does it work? Actually, this will tie in with the human chemistry discussion, because if I'm seeing you like this, and you tell me you have this, that, or the other condition, something that I didn't generally do before, but under the encouragement of human chemistry training, I now would do, is say, have you got any test results? And if not, I would say, could you go along, please, and get a blood test? Because anybody might think, how can I know what your condition is? How can I know that I'm treating you safely and completely if I can't see you, can't feel you, can't be shown face to face what in the body is bothering you? Well, so we take the help of the test. Or say, look, what did the GP say about it? Okay, they're quite satisfied. The tests don't show. Oh, the test does show. Right, thank you. That gives me a really good starting point. I wouldn't have known that just by looking at you. You wouldn't have known it, but the test shows it. Thank you. Particularly, this is the case if there is a hormone or neurotransmitter imbalance. The tests can show this, and this helps guide our treatment. And it also leads to our taking a very careful case history. Actually, I didn't always ask all those details. I didn't always say, what's your vaccination history? What is your drugging history? If you came along with a really clear symptom picture, I treated it. And most of the time I got the result. But I now know that it is important to ask that. But then equally, by one of the ironies of synchronicity, if you like, now that we have the training to enable us to deal with these more difficult situations, we tend to draw those more complex patients.
Interesting, isn't it, how that works?
Law of affinity, yes. Yes. Now, I'm talking far too much, and we're nearly out of time, I think. So anything else you'd like to ask?
Yes.
I think in part two, we'll talk more about human chemistry, don't you? Because that'll be a whole other discussion.
I think we should schedule part two, certainly, you know.
Yes.
Roger, I was going to ask you something, which is to do with overall health and whether there is a ground zero. Because we're all born in different shapes and sizes. Mm-hmm. Our psyches are very different. The way we think is very different. So when treating a patient who is unwell, where is that ground zero? Is it before they became sick? Or if I can have from a very philosophical point of view, one could argue that there is no ground zero because of the way that we are and our habits and mannerisms and the way we speak and our likes and dislikes, that there is always going to be ailments present. But we have to start from somewhere, right?
I like George Vitulkis's definition of the aim, which is that we should have freedom from limitations caused by health problems, limitations to doing what we would reasonably like to do or be in life. So this does presuppose we're talking of good aspirations, not thoroughly unsavory ones, but that if we want to be this, want to travel there, want to follow this line of career or something, we shouldn't be hampered by nagging health problems. Now, in this physical world, we are unlikely to be perfect. In fact, we cannot be perfect, but we should be good enough that we are not having to think about our breathing, our digestion, our this or that on a regular basis. So it's what everybody would know, their own baseline, what you're calling ground zero. So you look at somebody and suppose over 20 years, they've hardly changed. Well, they are fundamentally healthy. And then there's the difference between indisposition, which is a minor ill, which will probably resolve itself quickly. There are acute illnesses, there are subacute, and then there are the chronic things. And as you know, George Vitulkis placed a lot of emphasis on the chronic because they do not get better without dynamic remedies. They will destroy us. Now, look, we are all going to leave this body and this world. Our cure will not make us immortal, but we aim to be just as good as we can be without constantly relying on props on medication and so on.
That's very beautifully said, actually. Thank you. It's very, very, very nice. When you were saying that, I was in a nice space there, actually, for a moment. I forgot where we were.
Oh, good.
So back to the show.
Yeah, definitely.
I'm back. Now, you've done a lot of work with Ton Jensen, and we are going to, you're coming back very, very soon, and we're going to talk a lot about that as far as human chemistry is concerned and so forth. But with your wealth of experience, it's also nice to see that you do have a good you have a good opportunity to relax, which I think is important for any practitioner. And I don't mean relax as in sitting on a chair. I mean relax as in something that relaxes you as an individual, and that includes walking as much as you can, and also taking breaks perhaps in scenic places.
That's right. So we do that twice a year for a good stretch. So to move from the working environment to being where we have water and fresh air and hills and just that opportunity to be out, if it isn't pouring with rain or something else awful, does a great deal to boost us.
It's so important, isn't it? It's so important to recharge one's own batteries.
Yes.
I've always found that with the beauty of nature, the beautiful greens and even the autumn colors and the myriad of, flora and such beauty, taking walks in places. I mean, I know you mentioned the Lake District to me.
And that's right. That's
where it's such a stunning place. It really brings you back to grounding oneself, isn't it?
Well, both grounding and floating, if you like, up a high fell side with that view and quiet, basically. And yes, the blues, the greens.
It's wonderful, rock, isn't it?
Yes, it's a different rock underneath. So one's on a different vibration of the terrain, even.
That's very, very true. And I think I've always found, Roger, that going to places which are very undisturbed and very natural really has a positive impact on health. And I it may be someone is thinking, we know that. But really, we may know that, but how many of us actually try to make an effort to experience that? That's the important thing. It's one thing, it's like saying reading a remedy in a materia medica, but then actually experiencing that remedy work on healing a patient. It's worlds apart, isn't it?
Yes. So as for the relaxation, in our next conversation, along with human chemistry, we must talk about the healthy eating basis of life, as it were, the naturopathic or natural healing link. Because certainly when I began in homeopathy, many of them didn't have any of that background and thought all you did was just give potentized remedies, and found me very strange. I would say we should give our remedy against a naturopathically healthy background or a balanced background. So we can talk about diet and keeping that good life balance. So it's not just take this pill, everything will be fine. It's bigger than that.
That's very Charlie and the Chocolate Factory. That was, wasn't it? That was that. Take that bubble gum or the chocolate bar. But it's not like that. Health. That was a lighthearted.
Of course.
But health requires a lot of commitment, and of course it requires willpower. You cannot just anyone, myself included. We cannot just pass our worries about health to somebody else to manage. The inner force, the vital force, the inner drive, the wisdom that we all have, each of us has this, is needed. And sometimes it could be willpower. Sometimes it could be a change of scenery. Sometimes it could be moving away from perhaps people you feel are toxic. There's so many situations, isn't it, that we all find ourselves in a day. I always say to friends and family, I say, at the start of the day, you don't know what's lying ahead. And it's like when you open the door, you'll open the door and it'll be raining, and you close the door and you feel safe at home. And then you'll open the door and it's snowing, and you close the door again, or then it's something else, you know. And that's how a day can go. It can go up, down, it can stay down, it can go very, very high and then plateau. And it's interesting, isn't it? Because one has to somehow find that middle ground.
Yeah.
To remain somewhat composed, I suppose, if want of a better word.
Yes, it's that balance. Mm. It's that balance. Yes, absolutely.
Roger, it's been an absolute pleasure to have you on. I've really, really enjoyed our conversation. And in part two, we will talk about human chemistry, your work with Ton Jansson, and of course, some more of your insights and experiences.
I shall look forward to that. And thank you, Atik, for inviting me. I hope people find some interest here.
It's been a great honour to have you on. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
And that was the delightful Roger Savage, my guest on this week's episode of the Homeopathy Health Show. Wonderful conversation indeed. Thoroughly enjoyed that, actually. And I've got some good news for you, which is that Roger will be back very soon to talk about the human chemistry method and protocol in greater detail. So that's going to be coming up soon. And I've got a very nice surprise for you indeed, which is the one and only Ton Jansson will be joining me alongside, actually, Roger Savage. So we could actually say this is a three-part special, although albeit broken up into several weeks as such over the course of the next few months. So that's going to be wonderful. I'm really looking forward to that. So, that's a surprise. And there's many more where that came from, trust me. But there's only so many hours in the week, and or should I say, there's only so many hours in the day and so many days in the week. But my God, does time fly. But I do hope you enjoy the show. It's a great honor again to put it together for you. And I just love being able to share my passion of homeopathy with you by asking homeopaths from all over the world to come on and share their experiences. And I think, you know, that's the greatest learning curve, isn't it? To hear the experiences of others. It's great reading books, amazing, fantastic. Nobody can beat that. But, you know, when you hear it vocally, it's just a different resonance, isn't it? I just love it. And now it's time for reflection with poems of healing. This one is called The Inexhaustible Vessel. I write believing it has healing properties. Thanks to language for the poetic liberties. Trying to find their way through the window from the heap below my pillow. My jumbled thoughts tell me take it slow. Since March we have come a long way. Both work from home, virtual meetings and webinars are here to stay. On my mind are deadlines, reporting, meetings and workflow. But my jumbled thoughts tell me take it slow. The house is a mess. The plants need water. My balcony longs to meet me where the concern is evident in the way the birdies chatter. Informs them the people tree looking at me through my window. She doesn't smile as much, moves less and looks low. Diving into the ocean of competing timelines, I realize I am staring at my green friend when suddenly squawks the crow and my jumbled thoughts tell me, take it slow. Home is comforting, warm and serene, not the kind who would crib about being in quarantine. Days were supposed to be 14, but as I face it firsthand, they are updated to 17. And such are the idiosyncrasies of novel coronavirus COVID-19. I wish I was the host, but once in contact it touches most. Husband, househelp, help and mother, we are sailing in this together. But what bothers is who will bake the toast. A tinge of worry about to spread its claw, and right then, my jumbled thoughts interrupted to say, take it slow. Magnanimity is easing out others' troubles as one would have oneself gone through. I could not believe it when a couple of angels appear out of the blue. A pleasant call, a sense of care, and nutritious food. Trust me, for the family it served enough to uplift our health and mood. The gesture brought back my faith in compassion, kindness, humanity, love, solidarity, etc. The group of angels called themselves Akshaypatra. When we face days which are full of despair, we must believe that the angel would spot us and extend care, for the love spreads faster than the speed at which the evil virus can grow. When in doubt, just let yourself know that self-love is the most important and rest will follow. Mind is vagabond, the thoughts might aimlessly flow, but don't forget to remember, take it slow. This poem was written by Veena Singh, published in Sauti, Poems of Healing by the United Nations. I do hope you've enjoyed this week's episode of the Homeopathy Health Show. Please do support the show by clicking follow on my socials. Remember, the more exposure the podcast receives, the better for homeopathy around the world. You can find me on Instagram by searching for @like_treatslike, and on both Facebook and TikTok by searching for @like_treatslike. So let's promote the voice of homeopathy on radio and podcast around the world together. Don't forget to visit me online at www.liketreatslike.co.uk and click on the radio and podcast tab. Here you'll be able to see all the guests that have joined me on the show so far. And of course, you can stream on demand the latest episode to your mobile, tablet or PC. Until next time, stay safe and take care.